KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
It's time now for your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset. Starting with your coastal water forecast, courtesy of the...
March 13th, we'll call the meeting to order. Roll call, please.
Please. Jim.
Here.
Warren.
Here.
Josie.
Here.
Paul.
It's Mitch.
Brenda.
Yes.
Samantha.
Here.
Chris.
Here.
Grab a phone.
Good. So, in cold office, who all do you have?
Yes, Mayor Aspect, we have the assembly members Brenda, Chris, Warren, and then myself, Jackie, and Seward Brando.
Thank you. Cold Bay? Nelson McCool?
Just me, Sam.
Thanks, Sam. Falls Pass?
Tom must be in Anchorage.
Yes.
In Sandpoint?
Mayor Alvin, Jim Smith, Superintendent Mike Bathling, and Harriet McLaughlin.
Thank you.
Accutan.
Hi, it's just me right now.
Okay, thanks, Josie. In Anchorage office.
Yes, Mayor Osterback. There's myself, Annie, Glenora, Paul, Ernie, Carlin, Debbie, Bobby Joe, Gary, Ruth, Blake, Phillips with APCM, Tom, Talia, Charlotte, and Amber.
Okay, thank you. So, we need a motion to adopt the agenda.
Motion, Warren. I'll second it. This is Chris.
Okay, thank you. So, are there anybody see any corrections needed to the agenda? Hearing none. If there's no objections, the agenda will stand as written. Public comments on any agenda item. Okay. And at this time, does anyone feel they would have a conflict of interest with any of the agenda items? Okay. So, we're going to do presentations. These are informational only presentations, and the first one is APCM. Annie?
Yes, Blake Phillips is here with APCM. He will be presenting. Everybody got something earlier today. It's also posted on the website. Glenora is sharing it up here on the screen as well. And Blake, I'll pass it off to you.
Yep. Okay. How much time do you want me for presenters?
Yeah, 10, 15 minutes. Right.
Okay. Well, thank you, everyone, for having me. My name is Blake Phillips. I'm a director at Alaska Permanent Capital Management. We have been working with the borough since July of 1993 in various capacities. Today, we're going to be focusing on the permanent fund, but we also work manage some of your bond proceeds and operating funds as well. The permanent fund, as of the end of February 2025, had $47.9 million in it. We put a new number in there saying called net deposits, which is -9.9, which shows that there's actually been more withdrawals from the fund than actual deposits, and the market value still remains at a level of $47.9 million. The annualized account return over its time has been 6.5%. And on the lower left, you can see the main strategic asset allocation with risk assets at 52%, risk control at 27%, and alternatives at 21%. I have a more detailed version of that allocation a bit later. On the right, what you can see here is what we want to show is kind of some real primary drivers of the permanent fund. The goal of the permanent fund is to grow in perpetuity and provide a permanent potential source of fiscal support to further AV's goals and needs. The secondary goal of the permanent fund is to preserve purchasing power over time. The initial target market value of the permanent fund when incepted was $20 million. So adjusted for inflation, this is approximately $45 million. And so at $47.9 million, we are meeting both of these goals at this time. But the primary goal with the growth in perpetuity, that's the one that's always going to be tricky and could never be locked in. So it always requires adjustment and care with how it's managed. The spending policy states that the withdrawal amount shall not exceed 4% of the five-year average fund value using the five-year prior calendar year ends. What this does is smooth the effects of policy market volatility to preserve purchasing power. So for example, if we have a really strong market year where the market's up 20% 2 years in a row, like we did the last 2 years, that could, if you were just going on based off just 1 year and not using any kind of smoothing mechanism, you're going to see that you're going to have like very big ups and downs, which you know, leads to kind of hard for planning purposes. With the smoothing mechanism, you have a pretty good idea where year to year what is going to be available for the potential appropriation of 4%. Over the last 10 years, the spending has averaged 4.8% of that five-year average market value. So there was a little bit of overspending on average over the last 10 years. I know for the over the last several years, it has been much tighter to that 4% number. Moving on to the next slide. We prepared just a couple models of giving you some scenarios of how we would expect the portfolio to react given a couple different cash flow scenarios. And so what this does, both take into account the existing portfolio as structured and our long-term market expectations, which are over the next 10 years. And so what you'll see represented in that box is going to be where we estimate the portfolio would be at the end of 10 years. So with the 4% sustainable rate in place on the left, what you'll see is that 50% of the outcomes are going to come at $61 million or above. And so at the end of 10 years, that would be our highest confidence level. The blue box represents 50% of those outcomes. So again, you can see it's much more concentrated around that. You can also see that that dotted orange line at $57.4 million, that compares to the $45 million number I gave you earlier, showing that that original $20 million goal adjusted to 45, now adjusted to 57.4 million with our estimated long-term inflation of 2.5% of the next 10 years. And you can see that that $61 million exceeds that number. On the right,
is it possible to ask a question?
Yeah, absolutely. I apologize. Whatever your decorum allows, I'm happy to.
It relates to everything is the amount, February 28th amount you put in there. What's today's approximate amount?
46.7.
46.7.
So 1.2 million below.
Okay.
That's as of March 13th.
Okay, thank you.
And so under that left model, you can see the sustainable draw. So you can see that for 2025, we're looking at approximately just under 2 million. And then that carries forward. And what you can, and that growth is going to be that the estimated growth plus or minus that 4%. So the majority of that return if we use, you know, roughly 7% right now, the long-term estimated return is pretty much going to inflation with a slight bit going to growth. On the lower and the right side of that graph, you can see a sustainable rate plus an additional $1.25 million of distribution. And that gives you, and that is just for the next 5 years. And you can see what those distributions add up to, what they total at the end, and where your sustainable distribution ends up at the end of those 10 years. So you can see that on the same basis, our estimate, given those additional $1.25 million distributions for the next 5 years, is going to move the estimated value at the end of 10 years to $52.9 million. And the sustainable distribution at the end of that time will be about just under $2.1 million, where the other will be about $2.4 million. I just said a lot. Let me pause there to see if I can explain anything that I've confused anyone. Moving on to the next page, this is what we lovingly call the mountain chart, and it is going in the right direction. This is comprehensive of all contributions, withdrawals, and the market activity. The green and red bars that you can see down at the bottom are full, are those years which were managed for a full calendar year. So you can see that we get everything, but generally what our estimated long-term return is going to be. So you can see the mix in the last 4 years, up 15, down 11, up 12, up 10. So it's going to be all over the place. Again, showing the value of that smoothing mechanism so that you don't have, you know, the available appropriation dictated by 1 year's kind of market movement. On the next slide, that top chart is very important because what that shows is the rolling 12-month return as we went through time. So while we estimate, you know, come in and estimate, you know, what your sustainable distributions are and what your returns are going to be over the long term, all of that should be able to be backed up and confirmed by what we experience. So you can see those dotted blue lines. That is where 95% of our outcomes are expected to come from. And so you can see that path over the last several years where we've had quite a bit of volatility still is coming, you know, right in there. And so that is what enables us to have confidence in our estimates going forward and you know, hopefully provide that same confidence as you do planning and for the future. On the bottom, is the account performance over several different periods. The blue bar is the actual portfolio, and the orange bar is the strategic benchmark. So that is the benchmark that we have laid out in resolution with the allocation. And that is going to be just a vacuum in time. That is what is designed to meet the long-term goals over time. We do have the discretion to move around that, but that is really a good yardstick. And we do not want to be too far above or below that number. If either of those situations occur, and generally as a rule of thumb, plus or minus 50 basis points in a year, you should be asking what it is we're doing that is so different from what we had presented you as our long-term strategic plan. The chart looks kind of just as you would want it to be over the long term, right in line with that inception of 6.5% versus the benchmark at 6.4%. As you move to the right, you can see, you know, 1 year up 10%, coming off another strong year. And then this year, month to date, down 0.2% and a little worse if we looked at it where we are today, because we've had volatility with the rolling out of some tariffs. And then finally, on the portfolio here, this is the strategic asset allocation. This is where this will drive 90% of the returns over the long term. Not market timing, not security selection, which stocks we pick, having proper asset allocation. And that is, you know, different. What is our mix of stocks and bonds and precious metals, et cetera. You can see that all of these are pretty in line with risk control, bonds and cash mainly, at 27% or 27.4% versus the strategic weight, and on down through that. Everything is largely in line, and that is because of, you know, really where we're at. We have a lot of political uncertainty, which I don't think is a super shock to anyone. There's a lot of, you know, economic questions about how the tariffs and labor supply with immigration is going to turn out, and also not to mention the geopolitical concerns that we've been dealing with for probably the past decade. And so we have a lot of uncertainty that could really prop up volatility as we move forward. On the counterpoint, and why we remain neutral on the overall risk and we're not getting more defensive, is economic growth still remains good. We're starting to see some things, some cracks appear, but overall unemployment is low. Economic growth is strong. Earnings are still strong. Corporate balance sheets are strong. We are starting to see some signs of cracks show up in business confidence, consumer confidence. So obviously we're going to be keeping very close eyes on that. We do have some tactical tilts in place that I think show a little bit more defensive posturing than the neutral stance that you see here. We have taken a position within the commodities sleeve with pure actual gold. We put that on at the beginning of the year. That's been a small but strong outperformer for the portfolio. We also have intermixed amongst the equities some quality positions. So those companies with stronger balance sheets that would be able to withstand economic turbulence more effectively. But really, those are the kind of smaller tilts that we're taking right now with every, you know, kind of wait and see, not trying to speculate too much on how different policies may affect it in the future, and putting bets on that, and rather seeing, you know, what actually is going to be a little more firmed up in the numbers. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions on the portfolio, and then I'm happy to make market comments or not, really dependent on what you would like.
When you mentioned tariffs don't have a direct impact, they have indirect impact. How would you classify the effect of tariffs on our permanent fund?
Well, tariffs will have an effect on tariffs, and threat of tariffs will have effects on economic growth. Uncertainty leads corporate leaders to hesitate when they're making capital solutions, just as we, I think, a really good example of that, like in our state, we hear the oil companies talking about, without any kind of clarity on how their taxes work, we're not going to make further investments. I think you can look at the global, like very simply, look at the global tariff situation in the same way. If there is somebody who they don't know what their cost of capital is or how they can price a product, they can't make an investment to, you know, build a new factory. And you're seeing that happen in Mexico, for example, like with even the threat of tariffs, people are playing wait and see. When you wait and see, you're not making investment. That has slowed economic growth. Tariffs do have a direct impact. I mean, it depends how you're looking at it, but it will directly affect demand. When you increase the price of that product, the price of demand will go down. That will then, you know, turn into the supply, but will lead to inflation.
I did have one other. If the budget isn't passed in Congress tomorrow, what effect in the next week or two will have that on the markets?
Well,
what may
not happen? No guarantee on this, but it would likely be a downward drift. I do have some facts, but ironically, usually pullbacks during shutdowns end up being good buying opportunities. I think what we're facing here is a bit more uncertain than something we've seen before. I heard something earlier today that if after this budget, the next time the Democrats would be needed for a vote would be like October 1st. So they, I think, are really wrestling with how that goes. So, I mean, I'm not a political expert by any means, but it's pretty wide open uncertainty, I would say, across the board right now. And, you know, this has pluses and minuses. This is also why we have such a diversified portfolio. Actually, for the first time in probably a decade, we've seen the international markets outperform the U.S. So when there are these dislocations, there are negatives, but there are also positives. You're seeing a lot of European, like, industrial manufacturing surge, specifically defense, as they look to up their defense spending. So, you know, there's just flow of money, but it has disruption. The market does not like uncertainty. Thank you.
Mayor Ostermacher, are there any questions in Sandpoint or anybody else in any of the other offices?
It doesn't look like we have any here.
Okay. You want to quickly go through the...
So, let's see. I'm not going to go through all these charts. Love our information over here, but I think, you know, what we saw in the upper left, which is important, this is just kind of how we arrived into this current situation, is we saw inflation ease after that spike we saw post-COVID. The interest rate increases were able to be stopped, and we started to see some rate cuts coming into place, which were foreseen to go, I think, quite a bit further 6 months ago than where we are today. But across the globe, inflation did ease, and central banks were able to reverse course. There were recession risks, for about 24 months straight, where everybody thought it was very certain we're going to go into a recession. We did not. So that was, you know, a big, and we had, in all during that time, we remained invested, didn't get overly defensive, similar as to we are now. We maintained that, and that helped out the portfolio to a large degree. And you can see that on the green and blue charts. Those are various asset classes that the portfolio is exposed to. You can see both green and blue have been very strong, which is 24 and 25, very strong years. So we're coming off very strong years. And the equity sentiment indicator at the bottom right as we went into this year, was very bullish, very confident, which is negative because it kind of leaves one direction to go. It's kind of a contraindicator usually when we see that. So with those strong 2 years of returns, we did have strong earnings growth with that. Corporations were doing very well as rates came down. They were very strong out of COVID, but that did lead us to having some kind of higher valuations versus the long-term average. And that top left there, those orange dots are the 20-year averages for valuations across the globe there. The U.S. makes up over 60% of the market, and thus the majority of the exposure in this portfolio as well. And so you can see that the long-term average is about 16 times, and we are over 20 times. So that in and of itself does not mean that the market is going to go down. We're in that same situation going into 24. We're in that same position going into 23. It just means it's more of a headwind than a tailwind when we're above average. We're not counting on that to help us with our market returns. So what we are counting on is on that upper right chart. We need to continue to see earnings growth and corporations and businesses and the economy in general continue to be able to be productive and make forward progress, but not counting on that valuation to continue increasing for that return. And so it's going to be very crucial for that to continue, for the stock market to keep going, which is why I think that a lot of the uncertainty around the tariffs is starting to hit that. Because if we don't have that, then it's going to be hard to justify those higher than regular valuation levels. And then back to being a little more positive, across the board on the lower left, we still expect positive growth. And so, you know, that is something that helps to balance out some of this uncertainty. But that is where we are going to be living for the foreseeable future, I think. And so that, you know, that is a reality. We're going to be continue to be cautious and monitor the portfolio, around, you know, daily. But at the same time, keep that long-term focus, and, you know, stick to the plan that has been so successful over this, you know, long portfolio life. There's quite a few that gets into kind of more individual positioning, but I'm happy to just take questions for on any specifics that anyone might have.
Ask back any questions anymore? Not sure if they're on mute.
There's no questions here in the King Cove office.
Thank you.
We don't have any here at some point.
Yep.
Okay. If anything else comes to mind, Annie's very good at knowing where to find me. So,
I'd like to find
questions. Please, absolutely.
Are your customers nervous this week? Or
more nervous than they were probably 2 weeks ago,
okay.
Which is natural. You know, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of stuff we've never seen before. We're in a lot of uncharted waters. I think it's completely normal to have question. I mean, anytime we see that, I mean, this level of uncertainty and have so many moving parts, I think it's, you know, natural to be cautious, but I think cautious and asking questions and not jumping to action on speculation is really the name of the game here. We're watching this very closely. This portfolio is very well diversified. And also also keep in mind your operating funds, your bond proceeds, AMLIP, all of that is extremely stable. You know, this is where the most volatility on AV's balance sheet, as far as their assets go, is going to take place. But it is very well diversified and set up for success. I think, you know, go back and look what we've been through with the financial crisis in 2008. There went through COVID. Lots of different things, and this portfolio is continued to, you know, set new marks and continue to provide ever higher levels of support for the community. So, you know, I think everybody should be very proud of what this is, and then, but also, you know, just remember how serious of a job it is to steward these funds.
Thank you.
Thank you all. And again, if anything else comes up, please just feel free to reach out.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you.
So are you saying we shouldn't just run out and spend all this since we're making money?
Wouldn't be my first bullet point. Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. So with that, I think Annie's up next with the overview.
Yeah, I'm just going to stay seated this time, but we're going to just do a really quick financial overview. I know we went really in-depth in January, but items have switched. We're now focusing on FY26, and we have a little bit more understanding what's happening in FY25. If we could go to that slide. So just to recap, I do this at every workshop or that we've had, just to go over the borough's mission. The borough's mission is to provide governmental services to the communities of Acatan, Coal Bay, False Pass, King Cove, Nelson Lagoon, and Sandpoint that include education, fishery support, planning, project management,
capital projects, and tax collection. We have a ton of fiscal, statutory, and code obligations. There's a lot of them. Some are required to maintain operations. Others are mandated by Alaska statute or borough code, and some have been agreed to with an outside entity through like a memorandum agreement or some sort of agreement. Some of these are required annually. Others are a one-time payment. So here's an outline of all our obligations. Our primary one, as mentioned, is educational financial support, which is an Alaska statute requirement, and this is an annual payment. We have school maintenance, capital improvement maintenance reserve and improvement account, which is in our borough code. We have bond debt payments that we are required to pay. We have an agreement for the Akutan Transportation Link, King Cove Road maintenance with Eastern Aleutian Tribes, and then we have the one-time Akutan Harbor Army Corps payment for the second 10% for that harbor. That will be paid off the first week of April of 2025, and that's about $3.some million, and we'll go into that slide in a moment. And then, of course, we have our general operations as well. So educational financial support, we've gone through this numerous times, but this is required by Alaska statute in Title 29. And this year, this is the third bullet, is what's been updated, is that in FY26, the borough is required to contribute a minimum of $656,000 with a maximum contribution of about $1.73 million. We are currently just in the beginning stages of our FY26 budget process. However, we do anticipate contributing about $1.574 million to the school district, which leaves us about $156,000 below the maximum contribution. So if we go to the next slide, it breaks it down a little bit further. So that would be a $1.3 million local contribution. We do scholarships, travel, and in-kind services, which includes insurance for the school buildings, the borough office in Sandpoint, which is shared with the school district, the fourplex, and other contributions that we make. So that would total about $1.574. As I said, this is kind of still in the infancy stages, as we have not gotten our quotes for insurance or other things yet from APRA, but those will be forthcoming, and we'll be able to fine-tune those numbers. And I know I saw that the superintendent's in there. We did receive a letter requesting the full funding, and as of right now, this is what I will be proposing to the borough assembly, with the understanding that it's not finalized, and that I do realize that there could be another $156,000 out there that could go towards the school district. The next one is school maintenance. This is also required by Alaska statute under Title 14. The borough is required to provide all major rehabilitation, all construction and major repairs of the schools. The borough has been honoring this fiscal responsibility, and this is a big fiscal responsibility. There's a lot of maintenance that wasn't done, and a lot of things that are still failing at the schools that we are trying to address as quickly as possible. So, as I said, continues to be a huge need. It's also a huge challenge. Basically, in FY23-24, the borough probably expended about $650,000 on maintenance needs. And in FY25, I do anticipate spending $700,000 or more for school maintenance. We have a King Cove School piping project that I've been told will probably cost about $500,000. We have a quote in for Akutan water heater for the school, amongst some other things that we've discovered throughout the discovery process, which will be about another $100,000. I know there's stuff at the False Pass School that needs to be fixed, which I don't have a value for quite yet at this moment, but we're working on it. So we have a lot of needs, and we have a very limited funding source available for this. Also, we will be allocating probably about $5.5 million in borough funds to complete the Sandpoint School Major Maintenance Deed Program. The Assembly has approved the majority of this, and in the packet today, there's a resolution requesting approximately $4 million to complete the base bid work and two add alt works, one of which is the doors, which I know is one of the superintendent's primary items that he would like fixed. So that is something we're also funding, and that's a lot of money. The borough is also looking at building a new swimming pool in 25-26. We've been tasked by the assembly to work on that. We are in the programming phase. Hopefully we'll have a guaranteed maximum price determined here soon, but I do not know what that is, but I can guarantee it's probably going to be between $2.5 to $3 million for that swimming pool. And at this point in time, I still am trying to figure out how we will pay for that. So those are just some things that are on the horizon or are currently occurring in the borough. Another one is the Capital Improvement Maintenance Reserve Improvement Account. This is in our code in section 6.04042. At the last assembly meeting, the assembly approved an ordinance that increased that rate from $100,000 to $150,000, and or an amount equal to 2.5% of the total anticipated revenue from the borough sales tax and the state shared fisheries tax. So I would guarantee at this point it'd be about $150,000 for FY26, but that barely skims the needs that I just discussed. Then we have our long-term debt payment. This is a really long slide, but basically the one to highlight is that in 2026, we're anticipating to pay $2.58 million for this, and this is something that we will continue to pay. The amount we owe will definitely, as shown on this slide, decrease in 2030, and then it will be paid off in 2031. Then we have the transportation link. As I mentioned, we have an agreement with the co-sponsorship agreement with the City of Actan and the State of Alaska Department of Transportation that we provide this link for 20 years. We've been honoring that since 2012. And can we go to the next slide? Here are the anticipated costs for this. When I wrote this originally, there was potential that the Essential Air Service would not be funded at the federal level. If that occurred, 100% of the helicopter operation would fall back on the borough, which would increase our contribution to the $2.8085 million shown there on the table. As of right now, we only pay half, which is about still $1 million. We have asked the state for assistance. We're working with them to see if they'll give us some money. Also possibly change some of the co-sponsorship agreements so we can use some of those funds for operations opposed to just capital. But that's really in its infancy stages, and I don't have anything resolved at this moment. But that is something we are diligently working on and try to help get some assistance there. We have the King Cove Road maintenance. For the existing road, the borough signed a memorandum agreement with the State of Alaska that we would maintain it. We do have an agreement with the City of King Cove to maintain that road, and that has been in place since FY17. And that is about, if I think maybe the next slide shows it, about $100,000+ a year with the what we pay the city and then also for any additional expenses. And we also have already agreed back in 2008 to maintain the new road when that is built. And then Eastern Aleutian Tribes, we signed an agreement in 1993, and part of that agreement is that we would pay Eastern Aleutian Tribes $150,000 a year for behavioral health services. We still honor that agreement and have, I think, since 1993, at least since I've been around, we've been doing that. And then the Actan Harbor one-time payment, as I mentioned, this will be paid the first week of April. We will be spending $3.293 million. That money is already set aside in its own account, and it's been accruing probably about $50,000 every 3 months in interest revenue. That will be spent, and that will no longer be bringing in any interest, but that will be occurring in April 2025, and that will no longer be a liability for the borough. And then general operations, as you know, we're still in our infancy stages of the budget, but I anticipate this being about $2.5 million. This includes payroll, insurance, utility costs, you name it. It's in there, legal fees, anything like that, that's in there. And so that will be probably 2.5, but we are still in the process of fine-tuning that as well. So I'll pause there. That's all the expenditures, and then we'll move into the revenues. But if there's any questions on that, please let me know.
I have a question about the Central Air Service.
Yes.
Is grant filling out for that ESA between Unalaska and ACT-10? Because I think that it should only be between Unalaska and Akron. I know Akron Airport is City of ACT-10, but for them to get 100% ESA and then the chopper only to get 50% when the mail isn't even all the way here, it's just kind of crazy, I guess.
Yeah.
You know,
sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just wondering if you knew that they're filling out for the ESA for 100% grant filling out for Unalaska all the way to ACT-10. And I know that ACT-10 is, the Akron Airport is City of ACT-10. But it's the chopper who's bringing it all the way from there.
Yeah. Well, currently how it's set up is the route when they advertise it goes from Unalaska all the way to Akutan. And when we went and got the 50% from the federal government, it was agreed they'd only pay 50% of the helicopter while they'd pay 100% of the fixed wing costs to Grant Aviation. And we're only one of two areas that has any sort or has had any sort of helicopter coverage that I'm aware of, Little Diomede and Akutan. Technically, a company could come in and put in a proposal for something that goes directly from Unalaska to Akutan. So like the seaplane, for instance, when that was operational, that's something that could happen. But right now they do a joint application between Grant Aviation and Maritime for the Central Air Service. And Jackie, or Josie, I don't know if I answered your question completely, but that's kind of how it's set up right now.
Thank you. Yeah, the lines are kind of fuzzy there.
Mm-hmm. And the mail contract is separate from the Essential Air Service, the bypass mail.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And Annie, I think the Akron Akutan helicopter operation is the only one that's left under the Essential Air Service. The Little Diomede one, I believe, is not there anymore.
Yeah, I think the state covers that now. Yeah. I think. Any other questions, Paul?
Well, of course, everybody's waiting for what the state will do for school funding, getting back to school funding. Probably won't know for months, perhaps. You know, the governor has to sign something, too. But I just wanted to go to page 2 real quick.
Okay.
It's a minor thing, but page 2, no. And the word mentioned Bill is proposing money for the school.
Yeah.
And should say probably the Bill administration is proposing that.
Sorry, the Bill administration is proposing that.
And then just to clarify, a first and second reading of the budget for next year be April, May, or when do you anticipate?
May. So I'm
both will be in May.
May 8th and May 22nd.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? All right. Hearing none, we'll go ahead and go to revenues. Try to consolidate these slides, just be a little shorter than last time. But on here is our revenues. Our local sources are from raw fish tax, leases, and other revenue and interest revenue. States shared fish business tax, resource landing tax, and community assistance. And then the federal is from payment in lieu of taxes, also known as PILT, and then the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service revenue sharing. So I consolidated these all into one, but the raw fish tax is 2% tax on all sales of raw fish tax in the boundaries of the borough, the obligation of the seller. The amount of fish tax collected is decreasing. That is the trend, which I believe most of the communities are experiencing. And the borough does anticipate receiving approximately $1.3 million in fish tax revenue in FY26, which is approximately 29% of 5-year average. So that is quite low. These funds are used to supplement the borough's general fund and operational costs. Another funding source is the leases and other revenue. This includes like fourplex rental, tidelands leases, land leases like we have with the PICTA, permitting fees, and surplus sales tax. This doesn't bring in that much revenue, but it is a revenue source. And then the last one is the borough, the interest revenue. We've been investing our funds in the AMLET portfolios and other items where we've been bringing in quite a bit of revenue. But what we do see is that those interest, the interest we will be receiving will decrease, largely because we will be expending large sums of money in the immediate future, one of which is for that Actan Harbor second 10%. That's going to take about $3.2 million. That's going to take a pretty big hit. And then we've got all these others, including the school for Sandpoint and others that will be paid for over the next couple of months. So those interest revenue rates will decrease. The state, the shared fish business tax, which I won't go into a lot of detail, but we do receive, or the state's required to pay municipalities 50% state fish business tax. If it is within a community, like let's say Accutan, it gets split, that 50% gets split 25-25. If Port Muller was operating, because that's not within a city boundary, the borough would get the full 50%. But we do anticipate that to decrease probably about $1.35 million, which is about 63% of the five-year average in FY26. The other ones are the revenue landing tax, so that's based off fishery management areas. I think today or yesterday we received information on what we were getting for FY25. One of them was $3,000 and one of them was only $74,000. And that $74,000 was much less than we thought we would be getting this year. So that's trending to have a decline as well. And then the last one is the community assistance program. We've already received notice. We will be receiving $254,000 in FY26, which is about $71,000 less than the five-year average. So that's going down as well. I know there's some legislation at the state level, so not sure how this would be impacted without asking Mark Hickey, but that is what we've been told we'll be receiving in FY26. Then we have the federal funding, which is the PILT. These are received in June. We do not know what we'll get until we get it, but historically it's been $690,000. But that won't be, we won't know what we get in FY25 till June of 2025. So when we go into the budget, we just kind of make an educated guess on that one. And the same thing with the Fish and Wildlife Service, it's about $18,000. And we're never told in advance what that value will be either, but that's a funding source as well. So just to summarize here, last time we only showed two of these charts, now we have three. Just to kind of go through the differences on the revenue sources. In FY24, our local contribution of revenues was about $4.2 million, and that's shown in the bright blue. The state was $3.1 million, which is shown in the middle shade of blue. I don't know what color blue that is. And then the federal is the navy blue. And as you can see, the local contribution is quite large. In FY25, the middle one, that kind of changed, where our local contribution did decrease about by half, so 2.1. Our state contribution is also significantly lower, and our federal contribution here is a lot higher, and that is because we used the $1.55 million in the local assistance tribal consistency funds, which was a federal funding source, to help offset our deficit. That was a one-time funding source, though. So if you go to FY26, which is the last chart, our projected revenues are significantly less. It went from 7.8 to 4.2. Our local contribution has decreased significantly. The state one has also decreased significantly. And the federal contribution will basically just be the PILT. So just to show what we're seeing, granted, this is just a projection. Like I said, the budget's not finished, but as you can see, our revenues from FY24 to FY26 will probably be half of what we're accustomed to. This is a liquidity analysis. I might have to have Jackie assist me here because this always confuses me. But this, we did a liquidity analysis, which was basically to determine the borough's ability to pay its bills in a timely manner and assess one's solvency, which is our assets in excess of our liabilities. So simply saying, this is your ability to turn an asset into cash to cover operations. As you can see, we've got FY26 forward. The revenues are in green, our expenses are in blue, and without covering over and getting all the numbers, basically we're planning at running at a deficit over the next few years. Anything to add, Jackie?
No, I don't have anything to add.
Okay. I think you need to talk about this next one, though. So, yeah, can you explain this?
Yeah, this is just the chart where the revenue sources come in. So you can see just the decline in each revenue source. So the borough fish tax is the first line we're anticipating. Well, we did see a major decline in 2025, and we're not anticipating that to go up anytime soon. Also, as well as with this, a few lines down, the state shared grants, those are based off of prior year numbers. So we will see those decline in correlation to the local fish tax we do get, and it just kind of breaks down all of our revenue sources. And then at the bottom line, you can see our net change in net position, which is going to be red. And this doesn't necessarily represent cash. This represents our assets are no longer more valuable than us, than our expenses. So we'll have to start looking at our assets very carefully and see if there are some that are losing money, some that, you know, have the potential to make money or potential to be disposed of, so that they're no longer taking us in the wrong direction or costing us any money. But it does just show a steady decline in our change in net position. And if we're not able to convert to cash, we may run into some cash flow problems in the near future.
Thank you.
I have a question on that first.
Yes.
On that first line of borough fish tax, does it show the shutdown of Akatan on that chart, or is that not on there?
That's the assumption in 2028. This is kind of an old chart. We need to probably update it, but I think it was 2028 when we anticipated them leaving.
Seems like it's, I guess that would be right. I'm not sure. That's a good.
I just wanted to point out too that it does show a decline in 2028 because we are anticipating them shutting that processor down. But it's really hard to estimate what kind of decline, because before we were estimating declines based on our actual revenue sources that were coming in, which were pretty solid. And then we hit this area where we declined pretty rapid in a short amount of time. So we don't know the exact impact that's going to be, but we do know it's going to be less. It's just really hard to pinpoint an exact decline value because we're not in a typical revenue collection year. It's very low.
I'd like to follow up.
Yeah, go ahead.
Part B of the question would be, none of those incorporate the King Cove plants and revenues 2024.
I don't remember. Did you hear that question, Jackie? Sorry.
2024 is what we collected, which was lower than what we were anticipating. We had a higher projected amount in that year. We didn't reach that amount. And 2025 is what we anticipated for this fiscal year. We are hopefully going to reach that amount, but that kind of shows that we've seen much greater decline than we anticipated, because typically we're looking around $4 million. 2024, I think we anticipated $4 million. It didn't happen.
Yes. So just to briefly go over what we are kind of projecting in FY26, I mean, basically in FY22, you know, we began experiencing a shift in revenues and expenditures. The borough, as of right now, we're projecting to have a $3 million deficit in FY26, and that is shown on the little pie chart there, where that green thing is about 21% deficit. We will be proposing, administration will, to use the permanent fund earnings to cover a portion of that deficit, but that's still not going to be enough because that'll be about $1.8 million. We'll still be short. And so we're looking at other ways to cover that. And like I said, we're going to continue to research different alternative funding sources, but we're very reliant on the marine industry, so that's a little harder to do. So what we've been trying to do is creating a cash flow management plan, investing our funds wisely, the permanent fund, disposing of assets, making cuts, adjustments, and efficiencies when and where possible. We are in the process of requesting some financial assistance, and then we continue to support the fisheries. So we can go through these briefly. These are much more consolidated than the one in January, so we can go to the next slide. So the cash flow management plan is something that we actually put in place with the anticipation of Trident leaving in 2028. However, in November of 2023, our fish tax revenues took a dive where I think we got paid like $1,500 opposed to the standard 100 and some plus that we were accustomed to. So this plan actually came into effect much sooner than we thought it would. But the objective of this was to generate non-tax revenues through increased investment earnings while ensuring safety and liquidity of the borough's money to cover the borough's operation costs. We have really honestly been doing that. It's working. We move money, for instance, I just had to pay $1.9 million for the floats in Sandpoint. We were able to move the money over from our AMLIP over to cover that, and then when we get paid back, we can move it back. So we make sure our cash flow is running smoothly, so that this has been very, very effective for us. The other one I keep hitting is the borough investments. We've really been maximizing those as much as we possibly can. When I started looking at this about 6 years ago, we had a lot of money sitting in the checking account making 0.001%, which is, as you know, not a lot of money. So we've been moving that into the AMLIP, and we've seen a lot of growth since then. So that's been a really good thing. We have the permanent fund. I'm not going to go into detail since Blake just talked about this, but the permanent fund is there. It's set to be something to be in perpetuity and help the borough grow in preparation for these big changes that are coming up or are already occurring. We can skip all those. So the permanent fund earnings is another one. So as discussed already, we do pull out about 4% of the five-year average. In FY26, we anticipate that to be $1.8 million. We have been, up until the last probably 2 years, been putting that money into borough projects. And as you can see, this is still sitting up here since January. Here's a list of the permanent fund earning appropriations we've done since FY15. And that's about $20.58 million that has been invested back into the communities. Some of them were given to the communities directly, so they could use them for projects, and other ones have been put into projects that the borough is working on, such as schools, the dock project, the clinic. We've been investing back into the communities. So that's up there if you guys are interested in looking at it. Disposing of assets, we do have an asset list. We're looking at what we can keep, what we can dispose of, see if other people would like to have ownership of them or if we need to just get rid of it. One of the recent ones was the Nelson Lagoon apartment that has officially been transferred back to the state. And I actually did receive a call from someone, or an email, I guess, asking who an entity in Nelson Lagoon could contact. So they're going to contact the state and hopefully it can get transferred to them. So that's great. And then budget adjustments. We have tried, we've cut, we haven't filled positions, we've consolidated services, trying to take, get the most out of the services that we do have. So we're trying everything we possibly can to make efficiencies within our budget. We're a staff of 8. We do a lot with what we've got, and we're trying our hardest to make as many cuts and efficiencies as possible. Financial assistance, we are asking the state of Alaska for some assistance with the Akutana-Coon Link. I think that we possibly might get $500,000 for that this year, but that's still in the infancy stages, and I don't have a lot of details as of yet, but we are trying.